Hello everyone, welcome back to Stephen Minister Training. Last week we were looking at a module on confidentiality and how critically important it is to maintain confidentiality in caregiving. This week we look at a little bit different topic, but the two are related in a sense because we're going to be looking at caregiving and communications technology. And all the common thread all through this is maintaining confidentiality and the best way to do it. So there is a relationship. Again, we're on Module 10. Page 217 is the presentation outline, the beginning of it in your book, in your Stephen Minister Training Manual. And the name of this module is Caring Between Visits, Caregiving and Communications Technology. Just some general comments, and then we'll get right into the meat of the program. But Stephen Ministry is a ministry of presence. That's the bottom line. It's extremely important that we grasp that. And the only way to have presence, of course, is to be there with the care receiver one-to-one. That physical presence helps us to maintain emotional and spiritual presence as well with that care receiver. So no matter what we talk about today, none of it is a substitute for in-present visits. So actually being there with a physical presence. Some of it is helpful to kind of fill in a gap where there might be a need to communicate between physical visits. So we get the idea that what we're going to come away with in this class, hopefully, is just a better understanding of how to use technology and how to avoid its misuse. Like any technology, it can be a very good thing, but it also has its quote-unquote dark side if we misuse it. Going back to our devotion as we start out, the Apostle Paul is probably the best known for his many letters. And he wrote these letters to scattered people, groups of Christians that he couldn't be with all the time face to face. Those letters kind of give us insight into his relationships with people that he had to minister from a distance. Now, most scholars believe that Paul's earliest surviving letter is the one we know as Thessalonians, 1 Thessalonians. The letter demonstrates some important principles for Stephen ministers, and they should keep them in mind when circumstances do prevent them from offering in-person care to their care receivers. So Paul's ministry was built on person-to-person relationships, and those relationships were built on Christ-centered love and compassion. Very much like the Stephen Minister care receiver relationship is built on Christ-centered love and compassion. Paul tells the Christians, quote, "We were gentle among you like a mother caring for her little children, and we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God." 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 11 to 12a. Secondly, we learn from 1 Thessalonians that ministering from afar was not Paul's first choice because he realized there was a drawback to it, a major one. So sometimes he tried to offset that problem by sending a trusted friend, Timothy, to the Christians in the groups where he couldn't personally be present. And again, the bottom line, and Paul knew it, his letters were not a substitute for in-person. He seemed to know very well that a letter was limited in any care that it could possibly provide. So likewise, if you take the parallel, in Stephen ministry, we place a very high value on person-to-person visits. Because when your care receiver's hurting, there is no substitute for being fully present with them, physically, as I mentioned, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Now, of course, this doesn't mean that we shouldn't be thankful for the technologies we have, and that applies in many areas, because they enable us to stay in touch with our care receivers when we cannot. It is impossible to be present with them physically. So that's a good application. We just have to be very careful and cautious as to how we use technology. So it's important to know how to use this technology in the best way possible. I'd like to start with the opening prayer. Father, the scriptures say that when we call, you answer. You're always there for us, hearing and responding to every thought and every need. Thank you for the privilege and power of providing in-person care, as well as for ways to stay connected when we can't physically be present. Bless our time together now, helping us exercise wisdom and discernment in using the communication tools that are available to us today. In Jesus' name, we pray. Okay, let's continue. Using phone calls in a caring relationship. We're going to look at the telephone first, but there are other means of communication, too, that we're going to look at. So we're blessed with a lot of different ways to keep in touch with people when we can't be there personally. And we know, because I've already said it several times and will continue to emphasize, that none of them really take the place of in-person visits. They just help where needed. So let's look at telephones. In your pre-class reading, there were four areas to consider when using the telephone. And I'm taking some of this information now right from Focus Note 1 on page 217. Confidentiality concerns, caregiving limitations, risks for miscommunication, and boundary issues. So in preparing for this lesson, you were asked to write down some potential concerns in each of these areas. And what we do in the class is we discuss what the group came up with. I might say, I don't know exactly what you would be thinking of, but I'll just give you just a couple points under each. Confidentiality concerns. You can't guarantee that someone might not hear all or part of a phone call that you're not, even the care receiver may not be aware of. People sometimes answer their phones on a speaker. Look, you know, you're in your car, you have someone with you, you're the Stephen minister, and a care receiver calls. Well, the Bluetooth picks it up, and by the time you can even stop that voice, they've already heard it, and the person may have said who they were, and that you're their Stephen minister. I mean, anything could be breached very quickly. If the phone has a caller ID, other people might be able to see who's calling. And other family members or other people who are at liberty to do so might even answer the phone if the owner of that phone isn't nearby. So there's some real confidentiality concerns, let's put it this way. Caregiving limitations, you're not fully present as Stephen minister with your care receiver, so it can make it more challenging to try to be fully present. The Stephen minister and care receiver, you know, one of the things in communicating well is that when you converse with someone in person, you're watching all of the things that you can't possibly see over the phone. Their body language, bottom line. A lot of cues, a lot of visual cues that really you're going to have to rely on solely their voice to gather that information over the phone. It's just not as efficient. Under risks for communication, it's really hard. I'm sure you know this. It's very hard to tell what's going on with the person on the other end of a phone line. You know, you can't always tell whether they're laughing or crying. It depends on how they handle that emotion and what comes through over the phone. Sometimes you can have, especially on cell phones, you can have a drop call, interference with communication, that kind of thing. And if you happen to be outside in a public place while talking on the phone, there could be background noise, anything that could be distracting. Boundary issues. If a care receiver knows that you're accessible by phone almost any time. You're going to be called almost any time in many cases. Not because they even stop to think that they shouldn't, but these are people under stress. These are people who are hurting, so they're probably not going to be thinking about inconveniencing you. And it's not a mean thing. It's just because they're stressed. They're anxious. They're involved with their own emotions at this time. So you may get a phone call at 11 o'clock at night, and it's not an emergency. Boundaries. The care receiver may begin to expect that the Stephen minister should be available anytime when they call, and that can be a big inconvenience very quickly. And the Stephen minister on the other side can't be certain whether an incoming call from the care receiver is an emergency, so you as Stephen minister are going to feel bound to pick it up, and it might not be anything you had to take right away. So, based on all these considerations, we should look at also the good uses and the misuses of phone calls in a caring relationship. So now we're on focus note 2, page 218 in your book. We discussed this in class, of course, so it would be a good idea to take down some ideas, come up with some ideas and take down some ideas. I'll give you just a few ideas. Good uses for phone calls. I mean, you probably could immediately come up with a lot of these. You want to confirm an appointment. Let the other person, you might be running late, let them know you're running late. Very important. Don't just show up late. You want to check in with them maybe. Maybe they had a significant event during the week before you see them again. Test result, a doctor's appointment, or, something might be going on. Maybe an interview if they're out of work. And you might want to check in with them for that kind of an event. Let's say you're out of town. Either you are or the care receiver. The only way you're going to be able to check in, or at least one of the only ways, would be by phone. So that would be good, because if you go away for a week and possibly a little bit longer, rather than miss a visit entirely, you'd have the chance to at least stay in touch. Okay, some possible misuses. Calling as a substitute for meeting in person, that should never happen. Calling at inappropriate times, I mentioned that. Calling to talk as more of a friend than a care receiver, that's not good. And it could happen the other way around, too, that the Stephen minister might even be doing that incorrectly. And then again, calling more frequently than necessary. Kind of when you have a visit coming up, and a weekly visit, you kind of save things for that visit as long as they're not urgent. But if you can pick up the phone at any time, and some people like to do that a lot, you might be just overdoing it and calling when it really isn't necessary. So in conclusion, phones can be a good way to support the face-to-face visits. There are downsides, like any of these technologies, and some have more major ones than others, so just be careful. What would be a good idea is that you talk to your care receiver about some of these issues. And if you have a problem, on the other hand, with the care receiver and boundary issues, you might also want to talk to your supervision group. And if it's urgent for some reason, to your Stephen leader, myself. Okay, let's move on. Ministry of Presence, page 219. In this exercise, I have some small pieces of paper to hand out to the two people that are partnering with each other. So we're breaking up into pairs. And the first part of the exercise, I instruct the different groups to talk about something that happened in their life, maybe a minor annoyance or disappointment, and have a discussion, but don't do so verbally. Sit, do not look at the other person. Do not sit kind of so you're kitty corner, so you don't really watch them at all. And everything you say, you write down on a piece of paper and you hand to the person. And the same thing for them in return as, let's say, the care receiver. Do that for a few minutes, and then we flip that around, and this time do the same thing essentially, but no papers, and you can watch each other, look at each other, talk to each other. And, of course, we ask at the end that you look, you consider what the differences are and how it was doing one form of communication compared to the other. So the skill practice is split into a couple of pieces. Well, obviously, there's no comparison. Notes are like possibly a phone call. You can't see the person. You're just trying to convey what's going on. Actually, it'd be more like a text. So, more like a text, because you're not even verbally speaking to them. So, very, very much diminished effect and far less effective caregiving. Face-to-face, you know, we obviously, there's nothing that could be more effective. So it was just an illustration to kind of see just what the differences are and really be very keenly aware of them. So this exercise really shows how difficult it can be to try to provide effective care using written messages, let's say, and they could be emails, they could be texts, versus face-to-face. There is no question that you're going to get a much better understanding of any situation that the care receiver is in and provide a lot more effective care by relating in person. Okay, now, using communications technology in a caring relationship, page 220. I'm probably going to be sharing a little information that we have, in my own notes that is not in the book necessarily or in your workbook about these different forms of communication. And what are some other alternative forms? Well, the group will probably come up with email, text messaging, video calls. One I hadn't thought about until I saw it in the lesson, and I think it was added to this newer updated version of Stephen Ministry Training, that's social media. We will have something to say about all of them. Again, this is another exercise where the group breaks into pairs, and each pair is going to choose one means of communication, you know, one method, and they need to be different from, you know, the others. And then in the space at the top of Focus Note 4, which is on page 220 in your book, you list the means of communication, and then the different concerns. The two people flesh out what the different concerns are and might be for using that piece of that type of communication tool. And then once everyone has done it, all the groups have done it, then we get together and compare what each group came up with for their type of technology. Okay. If we move now into Focus Note 5, the group also gets to talk about some of the possible good uses of that communication tool that your group happened to come up with and some of the misuses. So again, what we're doing is just practicing what we've already discussed in terms of different methods of communication that might be substituted on occasion for actual face-to-face visits. Okay, so once again, there's confidentiality concerns, caregiving limitations, risks for miscommunication, and boundary issues. When we talk about good uses and misuses, that will become pretty obvious as people share what they came up with in these different paired up groups. I want to make a little comment here about what Bethlehem Stephen Ministry, what the guidelines are that we use and that we've implemented. And very simply, it's this. I would strongly discourage a Stephen minister from using texting, email. I'm not going to go any farther than that. Texting and email would be low on the list, and only in a situation where you had a very short message, nothing deep, nothing personal. Just, I'm going to be 5 minutes late, and for some reason, you can't reach him on the phone. Okay, so that would apply to texting and email. Never, never use social media. I don't even know that I need to explain why. social media, the chances of problems with social media and confidentiality are huge. And so it's very, very risky. And it would be very, very important to avoid those risks. One of the things that is even said in Stephen Ministry, and I would agree with it, even if the congregation has its own social media page, and some do, it would be very inappropriate to respond with a post suggesting that the care receiver talk to a Stephen minister. Let's say somebody said they wanted to talk to a Stephen minister. You can't have that conversation on social media. So instead, the person should talk to the appropriate contacts face-to-face. So stay away from social media and be very selective in how you text. Use texting, very limited and selective in how you use texting and email. If you have to use an alternative method of technology to a face-to-face visit on occasion, telephone would be the first choice. And try real hard to limit it to telephone and limit the telephone usage as well. Now we go to a break at this point in the class. And coming back from break, we're going to talk, the next topic is caring over the phones. We get a little more into it. Page 222 in your book, in your workbook. There are some situations in which face-to-face, we know, can't happen. And it might make sense to use the telephone. You know, again, we talk about when one or the other, Stephen minister or care receiver, is out of town. Might make sense, instead of skipping a week of any kind of caring or contact, if you receive a phone call or give a phone call. Or if you receive a call from your care receiver, something's upsetting them, something's going on, they need to talk right away. You don't want to turn that away or make yourself impossible to reach for a week. Maybe a significant event has occurred for the care receiver and the two of you need to check in. You know, as I said, job interview results, testing results, something that might be significant. So there are some situations that can be appropriate for using a phone call, but they are exceptions. And if you do use the phone, you've got to be really careful to listen very closely because you'll have no visual cues at all as you would in person. This even applies to a video call. You think you can see things, but you really can't. And you don't know who's in the background. And you only see, remember, what that care receiver wants you to see. See, when you go into someone's home especially, it's mainly that. You're in someone's home, you observe many things. You don't make it an inspection, but what you're doing is paying attention to the surroundings of that care receiver in their home. Someone who's slipping into depression may go from having a very neat, very clean-looking home to things kind of just everywhere, if you will, and it's all of a sudden looking like there's no care being given to much of anything. It might be a cue that person's struggling. So, also be very careful. The call doesn't become a substitute for an in-person visit. You want to be sure that the reason for that phone call between visits is to provide some immediate care, and you want to keep it focused and brief. Otherwise, you're going to wind up with an actual visit on your hands, and it's going to take the place of in person, and that's not the right thing to do. If there is a need to talk more about something, you just tell your care receiver, you know, you can pick this up at the next in-person visit. Actually, if you're not scheduled to meet for another 5 days or something, you could arrange to meet sooner. That would be perfectly fine, and it would be sensitive to their needs. Now, we're going to talk about 7 skills for caring over the phone. That information begins on page 222 in focus note 6. And I'm going to take a look at each of these areas. What the areas are briefly: making any time limitations known, finding out the reason your care receiver called. Third one, keeping the conversation on track, responding to silences, responding to crying, knowing when to end the call, and finally, assertively suggesting to meet in person. Okay, so we look at Focus Note 6, page 223, and you can take notes. I'm going to go through just some information on each skill. Making any time limitation known. This is a good idea, by the way, not just in caring relationships. It's probably a good idea whenever you would get a phone call where you think you're going to need time and you don't maybe have the time. When you have a limited amount of time to talk, let your care receiver know right away in the conversation. That's important. And you do have some flexibility, and you could adjust your plans if it looks like something's really urgent and important, if they have an urgent need. Because then you would want to talk to them, and you know, you don't have to restrict them and limit them on time. But look at example one in Focus Note 6 for an example of what you could say. I'm glad you called. Right now I have about 10 minutes to talk. Is that enough time? If not, we can schedule another time. Just wanted to let you know. Okay. Phone skill number two. Find out the reason your care receiver called as soon as you can in the conversation. That can help to focus the conversation on their immediate need. And you can also add, is there anything we need to discuss before a meeting, you know, next meeting, I should say, next visit. And so the example that follows that one is, it's good to talk to you. I was wondering, was there anything in particular you want to talk about at this time? Focus note number three, keeping the conversation on track, which is always important, but especially when you're on the phone, so that you meet your goal to provide immediate care without letting the call ramble on to the point where it becomes a caring visit. You don't want that to happen. Here's an example of how you can focus that. It sounds like you're worried. Tell me more about what you're thinking. Okay, you go right to the core of what you think you're hearing. Get the conversation focused to the point. And you discuss it sooner rather than later in the conversation. Phone skill four, responding to silences. That's a normal thing, even when we converse face-to-face. Somebody could kind of go silent. But when it happens over the phone, it's even harder to manage it or to decipher it. If your care receiver shares some strong feelings and then goes quiet, wait, give them a few seconds. I know it's hard, but if it's hard over the phone, it's harder in person. But you need to do that. And you might attempt an example for what you could say in example four. I'm wondering whether some difficult thoughts or feelings have surfaced that you might find hard to talk about. That's a good way to kind of break the silence if you can. Now, if your care receiver says nothing, let them know it's okay to be silent and remain fully present. If you suspect your care receiver went silent because someone walked into the room, just ask the question, are you able to talk? Has someone walked into the room? We can talk at another time. You know, you don't know, so you have to ask those questions. Phone skill number five, responding to crying. If your care receiver starts to cry, you'll know it. Usually you can hear that. It may be very hard to listen to, especially over the phone. Crying is an expression of very deep emotion. It's hard to bear up and watch someone in that kind of pain. But it's also very important and is part of caregiving to help people express those very deep, painful feelings, because by bringing them out, it aids in their healing. So we read example number five. I'm still here. Take your time. So you're reassuring the care receiver it's okay. It's okay to cry. If your care receiver is having a lot of difficulty getting their composure back, just softly and gently encourage them to take some deep breaths, take their time. They should be able to talk after a reasonable amount of time. Okay, the last one, assertively suggesting to meet in person. Am I in the right one? I'm sorry, knowing when to end the call, I'm one ahead. Knowing when to end the call, phone skill six. End the call when your care receiver, their real immediate need has been met, okay? Just end it when you know their need or needs have been met. That's as far as you need to go on a phone call. If you continue the phone call beyond that point, again, you're going to wind up with a caring visit over the phone, and that could take the place of the next visit. You don't want that to happen. If you sense it's time to end the call, you could try example six. Example six is on page 223 in your book. Is there anything else that would be good for us to talk about now? We can also talk more about this when we meet later this week. How's that? Okay, that's good. Finally, the last one, the last skill we'll talk about here, assertively suggesting to meet in person. Once the immediate need is met, you must assertively suggest continuing the conversation at your next visit, your next scheduled visit, or maybe sooner, if you need to schedule sooner. So the example that they give is, in example seven, which is on page 223 in your book, this seems important for us to talk about, and I'm thinking it would be most helpful for us to discuss it in person. We're scheduled to meet on Thursday, but would it be good for us to get together sooner? So you are accessible if there's a need, absolutely. Assertively suggesting to meet in person applies to other forms of communications too. I mean, email, text, all those things. But as a Stephen minister, remember, you're going to avoid engaging with texts or email, and especially social media. That's an absolute do not do it. They're not as effective or efficient, and you can get into a lot of trouble with any of them. So if someone, like your, meaning your care receiver, if your care receiver texts you, call them back. If they email you, call them. If they have a need to talk at length, schedule an in-person visit. When you do this, you assertively suggest an in-person visit is both a matter of caring and a matter of boundaries. It's also a matter of communicating efficiently and maintaining confidentiality. It ties everything together for the good of the caring relationship. And the care you provide, is the quality of the care is so important, and the only way you're going to get really high quality is to be there. That presence that's so important. And you may have to be very assertive with your care receiver about meeting in person, although they do know that that's the way these meetings are conducted when we see them, but you never know. Something might have to be reviewed again. Now, another piece to this. Page 224, please, in your book. Leaving a voicemail for your care receiver. Leaving a voicemail for your care receiver. This is important. Focus note 7 in your book. Principles for leaving a voicemail for your care receiver. I would ask you to read through them. Some very good points. Mainly, what it comes down to is be brief and general. No confidential stuff. Don't say, you know, keep away from that. Say the minimum you need to get the care receiver to contact you. And, very important, it's good to check ahead of time. When you first go to see them, how do they feel about your leaving a message for them, a phone message? And what do you need to do if you leave a phone message? Well, look at focus note 8. Focus note 8 is right after 7 on page 224. 3 points. You ask the care receiver, is it okay if I leave a message at this number? If I leave a message, is it possible anybody else besides yourself would hear it? And is there anything you would or wouldn't want me to say if I leave a message? Those are really important things to get cleared up with your care receiver early on in the relationship. Okay, let's look at focus note 9. We're going into the next section, establishing and maintaining boundaries and communicating. Oh, I'm sorry, on communicating between visits. Okay, so establishing and maintaining boundaries on communicating between visits. So, we talk about what types of boundaries might we need to set with our care receivers regarding communications between caring visits. There are some, it's a class discussion. You know, what type of boundaries might we need to set with our care receivers regarding communications between visits? That's Focus Note 9, page 225. So we'd have some class discussion, and I might just, you know, mention for you, those of you who are not in class, some of the points to mention, types of boundaries relating to communicating between caring visits, what specific technologies to use when communicating between visits, because you may have someone who doesn't have a cell phone. I mean, it's still possible. Isn't on social media, but you're not going to use that anyway, right? Any considerations like, you know, when not to call, if there's a certain blackout time that they don't, or what after what hour. And what expectations to have for responses to communications? So, you know, how long do you think it might be before you might hear back? Now, we do some practice again. Practice establishing boundaries on communicating between visits. And there's two skill practices that we go through once again. Pair up, they're done in pairs, and we select person A and person B. In the first skill practice, you know, A is a care receiver, B is the Stephen Minister, and we use Focus Notes 10 and 11, I think it is. Yeah, Focus Note 10 for the Stephen Minister, Focus Note 11 for the care receiver. So what I would just say, read through those roles, if you will. You'll get the gist of what we're practicing. And then move on to skill practice 2. And it's the same thing. It would be a role play. So I would just read the skill practices and Focus Note, in this case, 13 and 14. And then try to answer those discussion questions. You know, what went well? What could have gone better? What insights or principles did you gain? Some of this, unfortunately, kind of has to be done somewhat on your own without the benefit of the class. Hopefully, though, you'll get the idea as to what the points are that are being made. So we ask the question, you know, what did you gain from all the information that we try to convey about using communication tools? And what did you gain from the skill practices? Okay, we have a wrap. Seems like a straightforward topic enough, and it is in many regards, but very important, very critical. Remember, technology can be used for good or it may harm. We always want to use it very carefully, and it's never a substitute for in-person. Looking ahead, next module is Module 11, Using Mental Health Professionals and Other Community Resources. The assignment this week is to please read the pre-class reading on pages 229 to 235, and in your book, the small book you have, When and How to Use Mental Health Resources, now you're going to finish the book. We read through Chapter 6 up to this point. Please read 7 through Appendix C in that book, and that will wrap that book. We're done. We're not going to do, meaning the Stephen Minister trainees are not going to do, the Community Resource Assessment Questionnaire. We're not going to do that. It's optional. We have some people that, you know, organizations that we use here at Bethlehem if we need to make a referral. And, you know, we can research others if we need to for any given instance where they're needed. Okay, I would usually ask for questions. I try to ask for questions a little bit more than I have in the past, even during the class. I really don't do that on those that I, you know, the lectures I record, of course. But it would be very helpful if anybody has a question, happy to review it. Okay, thank you for your attention. I would like to close with a devotion I'm taking from Billy Graham. It's a little devotional book that I've had for a few years. He's gone to be with the Lord 5 years ago now, but he had some good insights. This one's on comforting others, and then I'll close with a prayer. Comfort each other and build one another up. That's taken from, by the way, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 11. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact you're doing. It is an undeniable fact that usually those who have suffered most are best able to comfort others who are passing through suffering. They know what it is to suffer, and they understand more than others what a suffering person is experiencing, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Just, I'm saying this now, it's the concept of the wounded healer. They are able to empathize as well as sympathize with the afflictions of others because of what they've experienced in their own lives. Our sufferings may be rough and hard to bear, but they teach us lessons that in turn equip and enable us to help others. Our attitude towards suffering shouldn't be grit your teeth and bear it, hoping it will pass quickly. Rather, our goal should be to learn all we can from what we're called upon to endure, so that we in turn can comfort each other and build one another up. Dear Father, thank you for being with us as we care for those experiencing struggles in life. Help us to always remember, Stephen Ministry is a ministry of presence, and as we care, your healing restores hope to broken lives. We pray in Jesus' name and to his glory always. Amen. Thank you for being there and for keeping up with the study, and I hope that you benefited. Have a blessed week.